Hi, if you've just joined us, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. And we're speaking tonight to Lilian Tay, President of the Malaysian Institute of Architects, as well as Nurul Azrin Azlan, Senior Lecturer of in Sustainable Design, Urban Design at UTM. Coming back to something you said just before the break, Lilian, you talked a bit about attending this public hearing about public feedback for the KL, the draft of the KL structure plan. You said that we need to relook this plan through the lens of future pandemics, like the one that we've, you know, with COVID-19. How else do we need to rethink the way we are city planning, taking into consideration future pandemics?
Okay, I think I'm very clear that public transportation is still the key to some of the major problems in our city, like congestion. So we should have no doubt, we have invested a lot of public money in public transportation. In fact, you would be surprised to know that today Kuala Lumpur has the same amount of metro rail service as Seoul per million population. So the infrastructure is very complete, but the ridership is very low. Mm-hmm. We, you know, Seoul has 70% of the population using public transportation. We have less than 30, about 25.
Is it the last mile problem?
Is that what it is? There is the last mile issue, and I think the last mile issue is not just within Kuala Lumpur. You know, the state and the city needs to work together to ensure, you know, there is a park and ride there so that people can get to the stations. That's one thing. There's a lot we need to do to do it, but we should not even question the need for density for to make public transportation viable. Okay. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to grow our cities and grow it enough to service the increase in population. Mm-hmm. Now, the issue here is that sometimes so-called transit-oriented development around stations tend to create pockets of high density in areas which are established neighborhoods, and that's where creates a lot of unhappiness because the roads are not ready and they may not come with a larger integrated plan to widen the roads. So I think we need very bold gestures. For instance, we should probably reduce car parks or even omit car park requirements to force people to get onto the trains, and then they will realize it's actually quite nice. It's very fast, predictable, and you can even read and catch up, you know, on
yes,
mails.
That's
and
I take public transport. I don't have a car.
Yes. it needs those bold steps to force people onto the train so that we can then achieve the workability that we've invested.
Okay, I do want to ask you, this is other thing that so becomes so much part of the way Malaysian cities work, and it's air conditioning. And air conditioning, we know, plays a part in the transmission of pathogens, and it's the common flu included, not just COVID-19. Can we design our spaces, the interiors, our workspaces, so much better to make sense of our tropical context and issues of disease as well, Azrin?
Definitely. I think with the use of air conditioning, I think it's also become a bit easier for architects, you know, because otherwise you would really need to consider the position of the sun and things like this, you know, put sun shading materials, devices, you know. But then with air conditioning, you don't really have to consider all these things because what's the problem, right? Just put an aircon there, right?
Lock everything up and
yeah,
then just
exactly.
But was that a creative response? I mean, look at the colonial, period was so inventive exactly. In terms of tropical living.
Exactly.
Right?
I think we are very privileged to have a climate that's very gentle, really. We don't have the extreme cold of winter, you know, only we've got some rain issue. But we naturally can actually coexist very easily with our natural local climate. And we did that in the 60s, but we adopted very easily the models from the West, you know, the closed-up box, because they had to have it because of the winter cold. And so I think we need to revisit even some of our solutions that we had. In real estate, often a balcony is considered, like, you know, not so saleable.
Balconies are for compressors.
Now we need to look at it as they are, you know, part and parcel of the needs for everyday living. And we need to put back, for instance, balconies into not just homes, but maybe office spaces should have a breakout area that is outdoors, you know, on every two floors, every floor.
Do you think that this pandemic is an actual opportunity for us to rethink design of our built environments, especially some of the built environments that were built many, many decades ago, that may not be as sustainable, as inclusive as we want it to be in this day and age. Do you think that we as a society, as clients, as policymakers, will use this opportunity wisely? Azrin, do you think so?
I certainly hope so.
Have you seen conversations that make you a bit more optimistic than hope?
Well, that's the thing. Locally, I haven't really seen this conversation taking place, right? You have?
No, Lillian?
We have put in a lot of proposals to the government in these months. You know, during MCO, they were working very hard.
Okay.
And we have reminded them, you know, they are putting up the 12 Malaysia plan, for instance. We have urged them to please go back and look at all the old public buildings, government buildings, the Majlis building, all the Pusat technologies everywhere, and to revisit them and make sure that they're more sustainable and resilient for the future, and to retrofit them such that they are more sustainable. You know, 10 years ago, PAM, for instance, had developed a green rating tool to quantify how buildings are energy efficient, and there's a lot that can be easily done. It's just changing the lights, you know, changing the air conditioning system, or even opening up some of spaces to be non-air conditioned, as we had, you know, already know can be worked.
Is it a matter of cost? Is it, you know, as you talked about retrofitting all these old buildings, government buildings, is it just that it's not high on the list of priorities of where the budget goes to at the moment?
Yeah, we tend to think of mega projects, you know, as the sort of catalyst and the sort of trickle-down effect. But I think we've somehow neglected many of our secondary towns and cities, and there's a need to go back and make sure development is spread across evenly and take that opportunity to upgrade all the deteriorated housing, public housing in the urban areas, also another area that has been neglected. I think that is what's needed to be done. That's what the government needs to invest in, local authorities need to invest in, to upgrade them and to make them more resilient. You know, the public housing areas were also one area of, you know, red zones and clusters, and they need to have better access to open area. We need to clear those crowded streets around, create a little green area. There's a lot can be done. These are small gestures that will need to be across the whole country.
I want to ask you about this. I mean, you clearly as experts and, you know, are people who understand this from both a theoretical and practical point of view. But who has the year of government? You have these great suggestions, but who has the year? Who are the powerful stakeholders in cities in Malaysia, Azrin? Can I venture a guess? Developers.
Yes.
Tell us, are they the stumbling block to real innovation creativity?
I mean, I'm glad that Lillian mentioned, you know, with the Green Index, right?
Yes, the Malaysian Green Building Index.
So the thing is, what I notice is that, say, the building used this GBI, for example, yeah, Green Building Index. And then they would use that as a selling point. You know, our building got the GBI, so we can charge more because we have fulfilled this particular index, right? So it shouldn't be a selling point. It should be like the minimum. The minimum should be like fulfilling all these things, you know?
It is an investment because you will get your money back in the energy savings, you know, in the carbon footprint that you will reduce. It's all incremental actions that needed every building to, you know, to even change their lighting, as mentioned.
But Lillian, is the client the king? Is the client the king? And does the king listen?
To be very fair, I think our government, there's a whole change of ethic. You know, I never saw the KL structure plan 20 years ago, but the City Hall, for instance, had really made it very open, and they have dedicated 2 months to hear out the public.
I think the government stakeholders,
local authority, is very engaging. There have been many sessions right at the start of the MCO. The Economic Action Council called in the building industry and also wanted us to come up with what are the things needed, the short-term measures and the long-term. And we have made our proposals to them, and I believe they're acting on it now.
Okay. All right. So you talked about local government. So I wanted to follow up with Sharad's question about who are the stakeholders? Who are the stakeholders in government? Local government, so city halls of each city perhaps has a say in how it's developed. At the federal level, who are we talking about? And who are the people at the table making those decisions about how urban planning is thought through in this country? So apart from local government, who is it at the federal level?
Azrin?
The, what is it? Anwar Musa's...
So federal territories, yeah. Okay, yeah. Federal territories. Yeah. Do we have local government and housing?
Well,
is that part of the
We have the local municipalities. You know, we have DBKL, for example.
So it's very much at a local government level,
yeah.
Which is often not made transparent to, you know, to city dwellers and ratepayers, right? We often, as ratepayers, we don't really know how... Sometimes some people are not invested in the way the community is developed, as we've had conversations on this show before. How do we get people living in cities more invested to urban planning, to the quality of city living?
Local elections.
Okay, you see that as an avenue.
Yeah, because then you know, if you are accountable, right? Then you would be more invested in actually, you know, fulfilling your functions, right? But if you are elected from above and you don't really have to answer to the people you're actually governing, then what is the motivation? Right. So I mean, local election is one way, I think.
But I think the local government, for instance, Kuala Lumpur, has also made some steps. They have invited professionals to be on their board. I think landscape planners and architects to be on their board, and that's a good beginning. I think since 2 years ago, to have professionals in urban planning represented at the level of the city. Perhaps that needs to be emulated also across the 150 or so local authorities, which fall under the Ministry of Housing and Local Authorities.
I want to ask you, the role of the media. You know, do we actually, many of us have the vocabulary to engage in a discussion about the trade-offs that naturally will occur when you're talking about design? You know, compactness against green spaces, against connectivity versus, you know, going through heritage sites. I mean, these are all trade-offs. How do we develop that? And the media help at all in this, as written?
It's very difficult to see this kind of conversations taking place. I mean, I'm very happy that, you know, you invited us here today, right? But yeah, it's very important that the media take a role in pushing this agenda forward, you know? I mean, for example, when we talk about the issue of density earlier, right? We have to really make the distinction that it's not density, it's crowding, which is an issue, right? So we can be highly densified, but you can actually design for it to be nice, you know. So it's crowding.
I'm glad that you busted that misperception for me. Thank you for correcting that, and I'm glad. Lillian, any last thoughts before we
have to wrap up? I would like to add to it affordability. Cities are crowded because of affordability, because of how expensive it is to build and to have a location in the city, because land is very expensive in the city. There is no control on land speculation in Malaysia. And, you know, land actually costs about one-third to half of the price of a property that you buy. So I think we need to revisit why housing is so expensive. That causes crowding. And how to, and part of it is also because we are so geared towards having a car and having a car park. When you buy a unit, you're also buying a car park. Right. If you actually look at the numbers, the space of that car park is about the same size as your unit, or at least half. A car park is about 550 square feet after you add in the ramps and the lobbies and all the lifts. And you may be buying a unit that's 650 square feet. And this is where the affordability issue lies. If they didn't have to buy the car park, if they could use public transportation and they can use it for 30 ringgit a month now, you would be able to afford and get your loan to buy that unit.
Well, excellent points made tonight. Thank you so much for being on the show. We really appreciate your time and your insights tonight. Thank you. That's all the time we have for this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.